It's A Couple Cooks, the podcast with Sonia and Alex Overheiser. We're a couple on a mission to find the tastiest, good-for-you eats you can make in your kitchen. Because the way we eat can make a meaningful difference.
Join us as we chase after real good food through stories, recipes, and conversations about cooking at home and eating well. Welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're glad you're here.
We are a husband and wife team, a writer and photographer who cooks together. We write a website called A Couple Cooks, and we also have a new cookbook coming out in February, Pretty Simple Cooking. We started this podcast almost 2 years ago to connect with you more, to come to you in the kitchen, provide recipes that can inspire you and people whose food journeys can inspire your own.
Later on in the episode, we're sharing a recipe with Maximum Hygge. Hygge. It's a pumpkin gnocchi recipe, so make sure to stay tuned for that.
And if you're not quite sure what hygge is, you could look back to episode 3, back almost 2 years ago. We talked all about hygge, and I'll give you a hint. It has to do with cozy.
If you're interested in learning more about our cookbook, Pretty Simple Cooking, head on over to acouplecooks.com and click the cookbook link there at the top of the page. You'll find all the information for pre-ordering the book, which will be available in February.
And there are plenty of hygge recipes in the book as well. Now, we are very excited this episode. We have not one, not two, not three, but four guests all at one time. It's the Pollan family.
If the Pollan name sounds familiar, you've probably heard us talk about Michael Pollan, the journalist and author who's written many books and coined that great phrase, eat food, not too much, and mostly plants. We have his three sisters and his mom on the show today, and they are cookbook authors, authors of The Pollan Family Table.
That's right. Corky, Lori, Dana, and Tracy Pollan joined me to talk about their book. It is 100 recipes for getting your family together and eating nourishing, delicious food around the table. We've been following their journey for a while, so it was an incredible honor for me to sit down with the four of them, chat about their family history, the inspiration behind the book, and their passion for eating around the table. The Pollan Family Table is here with us today. Welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
So this is a first for our podcast. We've never had four people on at once, and I'm so excited to talk to each one of you. I was wondering if we could go around at first, just go around the table and share who you are and a little bit about yourself. Let's start with Corky.
Okay. I'm the mom of the family, and there's also one other of us that's not here today, Michael. And my background is really print media. I was with New York Magazine for 17 years as the Best Bets editor, and then went to Gourmet as the style editor, and I was there for 7 years. And this was pretty much when my kids were a bit older that I really went back to work. So it was really a very close family when the kids were growing up, a family that we usually had dinner together every night.
Wonderful. And who's the next in birth order?
That's Lori, me.
That's Lori. Okay. Lori, tell us about yourself.
Sure. I sort of came into the food and the health through previous interest. Dana and I and another partner owned a fitness studio in New York City for many, many years. And that really got us interested in all components of health and wellness. And I also have a coaching degree in life coaching with an emphasis on health and wellness. And I'm a mom of three kids. And just having learned from my grandmother and my mother about the wonders and delight of cooking in the kitchen, I became that kind of cook for my family as well. And that segued into the Pollan Family Table.
So it's definitely a family affair, as we can tell. All right. Who's next in the birth order?
I'm next, Tracy. It's definitely a hereditary. I'm an actress, and I was always an avid eater, which is how I worked my way into cooking. And having grown up with a mother who's just an amazing cook, and growing up with family meals that were so instrumental in shaping who we were and are today, I just developed a huge interest in cooking.
All right. And who is next? Is that the missing Michael or is it Dana?
No, it's me, Dana.
It's Dana. So Michael's the baby.
No, Michael's the oldest.
The oldest. Okay. I missed that.
So how I got started, I guess, as Lori mentioned, she and I had an exercise studio for about 10 years where, you know, we were doing everything in terms of teaching exercise classes, nutritional counseling, devising exercise programs. So sort of cooking was a natural segue for me. I stopped working probably for about 20 years, but during that time I had three kids, and I devoted a lot of my time to cooking and cooking for them and figuring out what they want to eat, and that sort of my family, coming up with recipes that we could all eat together, that we would all enjoy. And yeah, it was very exciting to write our first cookbook with family.
So whose idea was it to write the book? Did it all kind of come into your heads at once, or was there one person who said, hey, I have an idea?
Well, I think it started because we would always call one another asking for great recipes. What are you making tonight? What did you make the other night? And we felt there was such a need for a cookbook, one that we could actually use. I think everyone sort of slows down in a whole list of recipes that they have used. They forget them. And we wanted a cookbook that we could turn to. And so that was one of the genesis of our cookbook.
So in reading the introduction of your book, you kind of paint a picture of what it was like growing up in the Pollan family. And I want to dig into that a little bit more. This is back in the 60s and 70s. You said that the tradition of family dinner was starting to kind of die out, but your family really held cooking to the highest value. I'm wondering if any of you have a few anecdotes that could kind of help to describe what it was like growing up in the Pollan family.
Well, I could say that what I remember so clearly was how all of our friends wanted to come to our house for dinner. And I, even then, I knew this was a little bit unusual. It's not that their families didn't cook, but Corky would put these amazing meals on the table, like broccoli hollandaise and Yorkshire pudding. And we thought this was normal. Mm-hmm. And our friends would always like, can I come over for dinner tonight? And, you know, part of that helped us to realize how special it was. And the dinner table was always fun of, you know, stories and laughing and teasing and joking and just sharing each other's company.
And the other thing, too, is that from a very early age, we were encouraged to not only help out in the kitchen, but come up with dishes that we wanted to try or we wanted our mother to cook. So there was a creativity that was encouraged in terms of cooking that we all really enjoyed and I think inspired us.
I think also, just to add, I mean, I remember this, and I think Lori and Tracy, you do too, of just sitting at the kitchen table doing our homework while Corky was cooking these sort of very creative at the time meals. And I think just sort of being around her, whether we were helping out or just, you know, sort of side by side doing our homework, I feel that had a huge influence, you know, on the three of us. And just sort of the dedication to cooking and the pleasure in cooking.
I love how cooking is just incorporated into everyday life in your family. And I think that's one thing that in this day and age, people have decided to separate it, that cooking is a chore. It's not fun. So you just do it as fast as you can. And then you have your time with your family after that. But it sounds like growing up, it was all just integrated together.
Yeah.
Yes, very true.
And I think that we've all been able to carry that on with our own families. We each have large families, and our kids are all beginning to really start to cook. And so it's definitely a legacy that's been passed down.
That's true. And they take a lot of pleasure out of it, too. They, as you were saying, for some people, they view it as a chore. But we see in the next generation, our kids, that it's very normal to go into the kitchen and cook something that you want. And it's fun. They have their music on. They might invite friends over. And so, yeah, that's how the tradition gets carried on, I think.
What are some of your favorite dishes from growing up? I know you mentioned broccoli hollandaise. Are there others that just put that nostalgia factor in?
Well, that's funny that you say broccoli hollandaise, because I actually, my favorite part of the broccoli hollandaise was the hollandaise. So I would want my mother to put that on anything and everything. So we would eat it with artichokes and asparagus and, right? I think that just any vegetable you made, we would ask you to make hollandaise sauce with.
Who doesn't love a good hollandaise?
I know, exactly.
And artichokes, I think, were a favorite also when the kids were growing up. It was a vegetable that most of their friends had never been introduced to. So it became a real treat and one that I made often, either stuffed or plain. And it was just such fun to see their reactions. They'd never eaten an artichoke before.
You know what's also interesting, you're saying about favorites, and there were a lot of favorites, but what I remember is that we weren't so picky, and we might not love one of the dishes, like meatloaf was not one of my favorite dishes, but I never remember saying I didn't want to eat it or what could I eat instead. And so that's a striking memory that I have, that what was served, we ate. And if something wasn't our favorite, then we ate more of the vegetables on the side. But pretty much we liked everything that Corky made.
That's a really good point. And I remember reading in your book that your philosophy is kind of, let's do away with the kid-centric meals, the chicken nuggets and the mac and cheese, and let's just all eat the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. We talk about in the book, The Common Pot, right? And it's the idea of coming together at the same time for dinner and eating sort of literally and figuratively from the same pot. And by sharing the food, you know, you're connecting in a way where you're not just sharing food, but sharing your days and talking about what you did today, what's troubling you, what you're happy about. And when there's such sort of separation with the dinner table where, right, one of the kids is eating chicken nuggets and the other's eating pasta and the adults are eating something else, you sort of lose that sense of connectedness and coming together, which I think is so important.
I've mentioned this on a few podcasts before, but I was listening to an NPR segment about research that actually proved that when people were eating the same food together, that they had shared cooperation and trust with each other. And it had to be the same food. They couldn't be eating separate things together. That kind of negated it. So it's very interesting.
So interesting. Yeah.
So in your book, you say you have this kind of fundamental question. How do families come back together around the dinner table? And you mentioned that there's research even now that show that children who have regular dinners with their family are more likely to have better grades, be more emotionally stable, happier. Why do you think Americans in particular, and maybe other countries around the world, why are we straying away from the family dinner table?
I think it's a time element. I mean, I think everyone is so overbooked and kids are, you know, have all these after school programs and they're tutored. And I just think it's really like a time constraint. I think social media and the internet, I think there's so many distractions that are pulling us away from coming together.
And also, I think a lot of people think that they have to do this every night of the week. But if you just can't do it every night and just set aside two or three nights a week where this is sort of what we're going to do, I think that's more, it's easier to get them started on doing this.
And also for you, I mean, the idea of cooking every night of the week is stressful for people and not, and a lot of people can't do that. They just don't have the time. Their work hours don't allow for it. But if you just say, you know what, let me just start to try to cook 1 or 2 days a week, I think that that feels more doable and you can sort of build from there.
Absolutely. That's what Alex and I do ourselves. And usually towards the end of the week, we have a day where we try to use up all the random leftovers in our refrigerator. I'm wondering if you all did that growing up. Corky, was that part of the plan or did you just not ever have any leftovers with four kids to go?
No, not very often leftovers. I was happy if there was enough to stretch for all of us to really enjoy. No, leftovers were not a major problem, but it was also been mentioned before. We often had many guests at our dinner table, kids who would show up regularly at dinner time.
But also, I would say that you were able to. It was almost like a math equation. You used to have those charts, and you knew exactly what you were going to make which day of the week. So I think you had it so well plotted out.
Yes, I tried to make a weekly calendar of what I was going to serve for the week, and that was very, very helpful thing.
I agree. Planning ahead can be a lifesaver, and it sounds so just kind of generic, plan ahead, but it really can make you be able to provide food on a daily basis. I think Alex and I used to just love being super spontaneous, but then that doesn't leave you time to do a lot of the things that you need to do. So just having a plan in place, even just a week in advance, can be so helpful.
And another thing that's very helpful that I think the three of us have done, the children generation, is that, you know, it was discussed earlier how the book came about. It was forgetting what our repertoire was and like, what should I cook? I can't even remember what dishes I do make. And we would actually, you know, ask the kids, what would you like to see? You know, what should I make tomorrow? Or you know, help us plan out the week's calendar. And that's another way to pull another generation in, is to get them involved in the planning.
Right. Do you
process.
Think it's like a genetic human thing of the like, what should I make for dinner? Suddenly all the recipes you've ever had fall out of your brain and you're stuck just with no ideas in front of the refrigerator. Right.
Or you have the thing where you've been making something that your kids love, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know what? I really don't like that.
I haven't gotten there yet. I just have an 8-month-old. So
yes, it'll be coming soon.
So one interesting thing about your book I wanted to talk about was it's laid out a little bit different than the standard cookbook. You have a market list. So you actually are duplicating some of the ingredients on the side in a little column, and it just gives you a list of what you need to buy of fresh food at the store, and it separates that out from the pantry ingredients. So you can just kind of grab a shot with your phone and go shopping. Is that something that you've heard good feedback on from your readers?
We actually have, and we personally use that all the time. But yeah, we're actually planning a new book, and our publisher said, yes, let's please do that again, because there has been a lot of positive feedback. It just, you know, shopping can become daunting with the whole cooking process, and it takes a lot of time. So if you can make that piece of it sort of quicker and go more smoothly, then, you know, you sort of have a leg up on the whole process.
So you talked about your second book. I'm wondering, in your first book, are there specific recipes you would recommend starting with if I just picked the book off the shelf?
Well, you're vegetarian, right?
I am, yes.
Yes. So I would go to the meatless Monday section. Oh, okay. Flexitarian. That's
right.
What we are too. I mean, it sort of depends. There's favorites that people have because they're so quick and easy. And then there are favorites that people have because, you know, or we have because we think they're really delicious. But what would you guys say? I mean,
Like the Supreme crispy quinoa burgers, really good vegetarian burger if you like those.
I'd say the mushroom cutlets, which I first experienced a similar dish way back when I was in college. And it's just stays delicious, and they're pretty easy to make and so tasty. I'd say those.
And then if you...
Ooh, is that a portobello mushroom or?
No, it's not actually.
No,
they're just the white button mushrooms, or you can use cremini mushrooms too.
Sounds intriguing.
And we have a signature salad that everyone really loves. It's one that people talk about a lot. It's simple. I think our idea for salad dressing is so great. And it's easy to bring to parties or if you're going to an event. And that's been a real favorite of many of our readers.
Tell me about the salad dressing.
It's very, very simple. And I think that was such a key for its popularity. And in fact, many of us feel, I know me in particular, when I'm invited to a potluck, which a lot of my friends happen to have potluck dinner parties, it's my assignment. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I could do something else as well, but it's always, can you bring your signature salad with your signature dressing? And it's just basically white balsamic vinegar, grapeseed oil, a little splash of, say, champagne or Prosecco vinegar or raspberry vinegar, and a little bit of olive oil and Dijon mustard, salt and pepper. And that's it. You just shake it up in a mason jar and you can make it up for the week. And you can always have a salad handy because the dressing is made and it's delicious and, of course, healthier than anything you'd buy in a store.
It's funny how you spend so much time creating recipes, or I find this as a recipe developer. I spend so much time on these big, elaborate, well, maybe not elaborate, but bigger entrees. And then you make a simple salad dressing and everyone's like, that's the best. That's the best idea. You're like, oh, I've been making that forever.
Right. Yes.
Yes. So true.
People really respond to the simple, more accessible dishes we found. I mean, especially on weeknights, they really want something that they can get on the table quickly.
So I'm wondering, we all have a shared passion for kind of spreading the joy of cooking and eating together and eating fresh food that's nourishing. Where do you find that, or how do you find that this revolution can kind of take place? Is it through everyday people and authors and media? Is it through the government? Is it through nonprofit programs? What do you find? Is it maybe a combination of all of them? What do you find is the most effective way?
I think it's definitely a combination, as you were saying, and it's just increased awareness. I mean, you know, on Instagram, people are taking pictures, or even on our social media, we've asked people to start sending pictures of the meals they've made, especially on Meatless Monday or something like that. And I think that, you know, the culture can increase awareness of the importance of, you know, cooking and eating healthy food and eating communally. But I think it's really a combination of all that you said.
And I do think the more research that comes out and the sort of science that comes out, I mean, it's all been sort of amazing in terms of how we eat and how it directly reflects, you know, our health. And I think more and more people, I guess through media and books and everything else, just are so much more aware of that and are interested in making healthy choices.
Right. And I would just like to commend your family for just being out there and putting out that information. Your family, all the siblings, including Michael, have been very vocal about this for the past decade or so. And I think it's having an effect. I mean, from what I've seen when we got into food 10 years ago to the amount of awareness there is now, it's huge. I think both because of media and because of passionate people like yourselves, that word is getting out there. So thank you for your work.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
So
tell me a little about book two. Why the book two and what will be different?
The second book is, you know, you were talking about being flexitarian. And we really wanted to explore a lot more cooking with, you know, mostly plant-based meals. But something that a book that sort of encompasses that flexitarian way of eating. And so we're kind of moving more in that direction, and that's the focus of this book.
You know, as we were saying, so many recent studies have shown amazing benefits in so many ways, health benefits, environmental benefits, weight loss benefits in eating flexitarian and adding more vegetables and whole grains and legumes and fruits to your diet. And it's kind of the way we enjoy eating the most. And we always got very good response to those recipes on our blog or, you know, from the cookbook. So we just wanted to increase the number of recipes like that in the next book.
Right. So will that be a fully, will it all be vegetarian or will you also have flexing recipes that have meat in them?
Oh, yes. It will be a mix. But it will be, if it does have meat or poultry, it's always surrounded by lots of vegetables where the meat or poultry would be more of a seasoning than, you know, a huge part of the meal in most cases.
Great. I love that. And that's kind of the way we eat as well. And that's what a lot of our readers are also looking for. So our book that's coming out is all vegetarian, but I love the thought of having those really main dishes when you want to flex your flexitarian muscle that you have some go-tos. I think that's a great idea. When does your book come out?
When does it come out?
Spring 2000. It comes out spring 2019.
Yeah. 19. Okay. So we have to wait.
It's a long time to write 2 years.
Books, right? So, I want to close in something that I read that Corky said. I love the way that you're inclusive. So not only in your own family are you inclusive to everyone around the table, but also to your readers and followers. But I love that, Corky, you mentioned and you didn't want to have a kids' table. So once grandchildren came along, you said, we're going to make a table that fits everyone so we don't have to have a kids' table. And now it sounds like that table is pretty massive.
Yes. Getting bigger, I think, as there are, you know, as the kids get older, there are others that want to join them for the holiday. So this Thanksgiving is going to be a very large table. We actually knocked out a wall of our dining room so we could expand our table to 21 of us. That at that point, we were 21. But I think this Thanksgiving, it's going to be very tight, but wonderful.
In closing, I'm just wondering if any of the siblings have something to say to Corky of just about growing up and the food culture that she's been able to help you create for yourself and for your children.
I mean, I would just say, which Corky/mom, you already know this, but I think just really being around, you know, we're so lucky that our mother loved cooking, really got so much pleasure from cooking and was such a good cook. And I think it just, she completely, you know, has influenced all of us. Also, just to quickly say that her father had a big sort of wholesale vegetable business and he took such pride in his vegetables. He had a huge garden and I feel like his excitement about that rubbed off on her. And I think now her excitement has rubbed off on all of us.
You know, and obviously, Mom, you know, I stood by you as such a little girl and you really taught me how to cook. And that is really, I think, the greatest gift you can give your child is to teach your child, boy or girl, how to cook, because it's a gift that you will then continue to share with everybody else.
And I just want to add on that another part of it is Mom Corky's love of food. And food was always seen as a positive and not avoidance or don't eat this or don't eat that. It was everything in moderation. She cooked with oil. She cooked with butter. She'd use cream in a recipe. And it was enjoyment and pleasure. And I think that legacy really gets passed on in such a positive way. So that she definitely gave to all of us as well.
I'm tearing up over here. Corky, any final thoughts?
And yes, I'm tearing up too. It's so sweet. No, it's been such an amazing experience. I think writing our first book together was just amazing. And looking so forward to what we've been doing with the second book, developing the recipes and just developing the ideas has been just a wonderful, wonderful experience for me.
And what a gift to give to the world as well.
Aw, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Tracy, Dana, Lori, and Corky Pollen. Thank you again so much for your time. It's been an honor.
Thank you so much. Really fun.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for us too. Yeah, thank you.
The thread from a great-grandfather having a farm and growing a gigantic vegetable garden to a mom who's working but making sure to provide food on her table for all of her kids and her kids' friends, to these kids growing up and having kids of their own who are now getting in the kitchen and having fun with it. I love that thread of food being cross-generational. If you sit down at the table together and share some food, it's going to be an experience that brings you together.
It's absolutely part of a family culture. And I know that's a culture that we try to cultivate in our own family. I've talked to so many people around the country who have told me that they are committed to that for their own families. I was just talking to someone today who has a really large family, and she was telling me how she has 12 nieces and nephews, and she just really desires to bring the cooking culture from her really large family to this next generation of cooks.
But if your grandfather was not a farmer and you grew up eating fast food by yourself in the corner, don't worry, it's not too late. You can start cooking now. And we'd recommend starting with this pumpkin goat cheese baked gnocchi.
Well, I guess that's as good of a place to start as any.
Start right here.
So we just created this recipe for fall, for this fall, and we've released it on our website today. So it is hot off the presses. And if you haven't had gnocchi before, they are like big dough balls, which is amazing.
Dough balls made out of potatoes, generally.
Right. And if you love to eat dough when you're baking, this is the perfect meal for you. I'm a big dough fan. So gnocchi is a traditional Italian pasta. Traditionally, it's made with potatoes and then flour is added, some seasonings. You can make them with potato. You can make them also with ricotta. We have a great ricotta gnocchi recipe. In this recipe, we are doing a baked gnocchi. So we actually just bought some from the store. We found some high quality gnocchi at our local store.
You can find it in the pasta section generally.
That's right. And for the sauce, we created a pumpkin sauce. So it is not the traditional pumpkin spices, cinnamon and nutmeg. It's actually a savory pumpkin sauce. So we've used vegetable broth and actually chili powder and a few other spices to create a really savory, gooey sauce for those dough balls. And then we've put some dollops of goat cheese on the top and a little bit of thinly sliced sage. Once you put that in the oven, the goat cheese melts a little bit, and it is just this gooey, cozy autumn hug.
I couldn't agree more. And there's something special about that pumpkin with the goat cheese. I feel like it's a combination you don't see too much. So you have a little bit of that sweet earthiness from the pumpkin with the tart goat cheese. And it's something different. And I think you'll enjoy it.
So let us know if you make it. We'd love to hear from you on Instagram. We are at A Couple Cooks. Or you can shoot us a note from our website, acouplecooks.com. We've got lots of other recipes over there on acouplecooks.com, and you might wonder, why do they create so many recipes? Well, we are so passionate about that culture of cooking and passing that down, passing it to friends, passing it to family, that we've devoted our lives to sharing recipes, and we really hope that you're able to find one or two that you enjoy. Please drop us a line if you make any one of them.
Thank you for listening today. You can find a link to the Pollen Family Table Cookbook in the show notes, as well as a link to this pumpkin gnocchi.
Thanks for tuning in.